Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. My name is David Chadderton and I'm speaking to David Thacker, the Artistic Director of the Octagon Theatre in Bolton, whose production of Arthur Miller's The Price is currently running. But David has had an association with Miller's plays and with Arthur Miller himself for quite a number of years, including some highly acclaimed productions with very well-known actors over the last 20 years or more. The Price is one of Miller's lesser-known plays, probably, and David last directed it in 1990 when he was artistic director of the Young Vic in London. And at that time, he was fortunate enough to have Arthur Miller in the rehearsal room with him for a short while. When did your interest and association with Arthur Miller and his plays just begin?
Well, my interest in his plays began the very first time that I saw one, which was at York Theatre Royal when I saw a production of A View from the Bridge that was directed by Bob Carlton. Long time ago, I was completely knocked out by the play because I'd never seen a play like it before. And if I cast back my mind to what the impression was, I think the things that struck me most about it was, first of all, that you had in the middle of the play a working class tragic hero, which I don't think I'd ever seen a play that had actually elevated the status of a normal guy, if you like, in that kind of way, but also the fact that the play had such an incredibly strong narrative, that the story was so compelling, that it was such an emotionally powerful play, and that it's a play in which clearly the playwright, unfamiliar to me at the time, had a fantastic capacity for language. And I guess that those have been the characteristics that have compelled me to want to work on Arthur Miller's plays ever since. My actual first personal experience of working with him was when I directed a production of An Enemy of the People at the Young Vic, and it was Arthur Miller's version of Ibsen's play. And the play is, of course, set in Norway, but because Arthur Miller is or was an American writer, the language was very American in the sense that a lot of American slang. So I was faced with the problem of doing it in England at the Young Vic, set in Norway, of course, ostensibly an Ibsen play, Ibsen stroke Miller, but Norwegian play, which would have been very bizarre with American accents. So his agent kindly put me in touch with him on the telephone, and I began a telephone relationship with him discussing that very issue that I just described to you. And that then led to a more in-depth kind of contact over the telephone. And to cut a long story short, the production was successful and transferred to the West End. And he came to see it in the West End. What coincided with his visit, I was directing a production of a double bill of his called Two Way Mirror with Helen Mirren and Bob Peck. And he said he'd like to attend rehearsals with us, which was, of course, a great privilege for us. But as he was in London for a week, he decided he'd like to stay with us for a week. And that was a fantastic experience for us. And that's when I first worked on a play of his, in that case, two plays, with him in the room. Then that led to a further practical working relationship when I did a production of The Price, which hadn't been done in London since his first production that he directed himself in 1968. And similarly, he came to rehearsals, and in that case, he came to the end of the rehearsal period, stayed for a week to 10 days right at the end, and we worked through the play in great detail. So that is, in a nutshell, how my relationship developed. And then it went from strength to strength, culminating in two British premieres of his plays. And most especially for me was Broken Glass at the National Theatre, which, following the National Theatre and West End production and the tour, I then made into a film in which I collaborated with him on the screenplay of the film. And that's a kind of summary of how it all happened, really.
When you've got somebody like Miller in the rehearsal room with you, it must be a double-edged thing, because on one hand, he could be very helpful, but on the other hand, it must be quite intimidating, particularly a playwright of his stature.
Well, to be honest, to begin with, it was terrifying, more to do with my absolute admiration for him than anything that he gave off, I have to say. I mean, it was more that the idea of actually rehearsing a play by a playwright like that, be like having Chekhov in the room or something, with him watching you rehearse, was a little scary to begin with. But what became very clear very early on in my relationship with him was that we saw things pretty much the same, I would say, in our, broadly speaking, our value system. And although we approach things in a different way, I brought a director's sensibility and bag of tricks, if you like, which a writer doesn't necessarily have. And I think he was fascinated at the way that when we worked together, I was able to take the actors through processes that he was perhaps unfamiliar with, which seemed to unlock his plays. So very rapidly it became a real collaboration. And I would say certainly that the week working on The Price was essentially, it felt like co-directing with him by at that point, because I was very comfortable with him being there and him making whatever interventions he wanted to make. Principally because as a director, I see my task really as being to deliver the play for the playwright. I have no interest really in doing a version of somebody's plays, particularly when it's a great playwright like Arthur Miller. All I'm trying to do is express the play as fully and richly and profoundly as I possibly can. And any insights that the director is able to get from the writer, I mean, they're very valuable. Now, certainly it's a case with some writers that they can be a bit of a pain in the neck. And having them in the room, even though nothing I've said I'd want to kind of contradict, even if the writer is a bit of a pain in the neck, I still want to be able to express his or her play for them. But it may be that they're not that suited to a rehearsal process. Because as a director, you need to be very careful and patient about how you take actors through a rehearsal period, and frankly you readjust depending on what the actor's needs are, and you don't have a kind of formulaic way of doing it that you impose upon everybody. Now, Arthur was incredibly sensitive to the actor's needs, I would say, and also had a very engaging degree of honesty. He was very honest and straightforward in a way I think that actors valued and respected, even if sometimes it might kind of set them back a bit. But I also remember one thing he said to me, which I think in a nutshell indicates the kind of respect he had for actors, particularly British actors, I have to say. He said, the wonderful thing about, this was when we were doing Broken Glass, and he said, in relation to the cast of Broken Glass, he said, the wonderful thing about these actors is if they're pointing east and you say, no, it's west, they do it. Whereas with American actors, it would take a week to get them off the ceiling. And I think he loved the atmosphere of a British rehearsal, and the kind of intelligence and respect that certainly the actors that I was privileged enough to be working with brought to his work. So it wasn't, once you got used to it, it wasn't really intimidating at all. It was just a privilege, really, a joyful privilege.
In some ways, he is a peculiar hybrid of American and European, isn't he? Because, I mean, on the surface, his plays seem very American in their subject matter and the language, but the style of his writing does seem very European, particularly the influence of Ibsen. That's very obvious, of course.
I think that's such an astute point, actually, because he does have a European sensibility, doesn't he? I agree with you. And I think also he's very comfortable with kind of, if you like, a European value system. And he One of the things I think that he liked very much about British actors was the fact that they, certainly the ones he worked with, I don't want to kind of generalize, but certainly the actors that we were working together with, they had a very acute sense of language. And of course, if you're a poet, as Arthur Miller is, and every line you write is carefully honed and perfected, crafted, I often think rather like he crafted his furniture, because you know, he was a carpenter. He actually built the kind of shed in the grounds of his house in Connecticut, where he wrote some Death of a Salesman. He couldn't begin writing Death of a Salesman until he'd created this kind of office in the grounds that he wrote it in. And it seems to me that he wrote his plays with that utter kind of sense of precision about language. And so he absolutely valued and respected any actor who would bring a linguistic sensibility to bear upon it. He used a phrase about one actor which has stayed with me, and I often use in rehearsal to this day, actually, on any play I'm directing, not just the work of Arthur Miller. When he was speaking of one actor, and he said, "The great thing about him is that every line lands." And there's this kind of phrase, "every line lands." And I knew exactly what he meant, that the line is being kind of served up. And I think it's that mixture that you need when I happen to believe, as it happens, that's what you need in performing any great play. You need to have, as an actor, a combination of an understanding of the psychological, what's happening psychologically and emotionally for the characters, but also a sense of language and how you actually deliver the play through words. And because, self-evidently, theatre is a verbal medium to a large extent. But if you get plays like his, which actually require the actors to be to dig very deep into their emotional systems, it's very, very hard to get actors who can do that, frankly, who can bring all that stuff together, which is why I think his plays are so hard to do.
The Price, you said before, it hadn't been revived since 1968 until you did it at the Young Vic in 1990, and it's not one that's done very often even to this day. What made you choose that play?
Well, there's some practical reasons and personal reasons. A practical reason is that a lot of the... Well, the four famous Arthur Miller plays, I think we can say, probably there are four very famous plays, The Crucible, Death of a Salesman, All My Sons, and A View from the Bridge. Probably because they were early plays. Also, I don't think it's accidental that they're all kind of set text plays. You know, they have been for years. People have studied them in schools, which is, I think, another reason why they become, you know, ingrained in people's consciousness a bit more. I happen personally to believe that The Price is every bit as great a play as those plays. But it's very, very hard to do, I would say. I mean, a number of people have come to see this production. I'm delighted that they've actually said, "Oh, I've seen this play before and I found it really boring." And it's knocking people out here at the moment, simply because the actors do have what I just said, that combination of characteristics. So to answer your question directly, it seemed to me very much a play for today. I mean, we're about to enter into perhaps a period of enormous economic uncertainty. I mean, who knows? We might even be plunged into a depression again. And if we do, there is a major economic crisis, then exactly what these characters, what happened at the heart of this play, even though, as you know, the play isn't set in the Depression, it's the Depression that is the motor engine for everything that happened in the play, because it was the collapse of the family, modeled, of course, on the collapse of Arthur Miller's family. I mean, when his own family went completely bust and they lost everything overnight, and Arthur Miller's used that as the kind of starting point of this play, where the father of the two brothers who the play is centered on went bust overnight, lost everything in 5 weeks, several million pounds in 5 weeks, and went into a kind of essentially paralysis, emotional nervous breakdown kind of paralysis as a result of that. And it was that was the incident that split the brothers up. And that's actually what the play is dealing with to a large extent. And Arthur Miller never really kind of recovered from that. And I think right up until his death, he was concerned in some subconscious way that he might lose everything as well. So I think it scarred him quite deeply. The other thing I've kind of felt rehearsing the play this time, which perhaps I wasn't quite as conscious of before, because I'm closer to the age of the characters at the heart of it, and also Arthur Miller when he wrote it, was the fact that it seems to me now to be a play that the writer was compelled to write, in the sense that he hadn't resolved these issues. Do you know what I mean? Now, often with playwrights, you feel they're actually writing about stuff that they've resolved. Whereas I think in this play, Arthur had really genuinely not resolved the things that he needed to write about, which is why I think it's so powerful, because you are continually invited to shift your perspective as you're watching the play. And I think that's the thing that the audience like most about it, really, is kind of, it's like, in that sense, it's like a thriller, that 1 minute you think this and 5 minutes later you think something else, and then you think the opposite, and then you think the opposite to that. And that's a very dynamic experience for an audience, I think.
Did you ever get to speak to him at all about his personal association with the issues?
Well, yes, because I was very lucky to be able to speak to him quite a lot, both in the rehearsal room, and also I stayed at his home in Connecticut three times, and also in his flat in New York overnight after I saw Broken Glass in New York on Broadway with him. And so I was able to talk about, you know, quite deeply personal things. And in this case, for example, he had a relationship with his own brother that was fraught. And I think that that's another thing that he needed to kind of deal with in the play. And any sense of regret he had about actions that he might have taken in the past, that I think he needed to find a fictional form of dealing with.
This is quite unusual for a Miller, in that there's a very obvious comedy character in this, in the Solomon, the antique dealer. How did you integrate that? Because he's still a very natural and fully rounded character, but it's definitely a comic role, isn't it?
Well, do you know, I have to say, I find a lot of his plays very, very funny. I don't know whether, perhaps I'm also influenced by the fact that perhaps I have a very similar sense of humour to Arthur. Because I was so aware of him in the rehearsal room, you wouldn't believe how much he would laugh in the rehearsal room. Laugh at, endearingly, laugh at his own jokes, as it were. But even in a play like Death of a Salesman, there are actually lots and lots and lots of laughs, to put it crudely. And with All My Sons, that was the first play I did here when I became artistic director here. I would say in the first 2 minutes, there are kind of like, to put it really crudely, I don't think like this when I'm directing a play, but I'll put it really crudely to you. You would say there are 10 laughs in the first 2 minutes, really, if the actor is kind of just alert to his sense of humor. I mean, if I give you an example, it's not the kind of bring the house down kind of humor, but in All My Sons, for example, one of the characters reading a paper, and he says, it's going to rain tonight, okay, reading the weather forecast, okay. The doctor on stage says, paper say so. He says, yes. Reply, then it can't rain. Now, I would say that's the essence of Arthur Miller's wit, really. And I think his plays are shot through with that. So now, those aren't kind of bring the house down lines, laughs, do you know what I mean? But they permeate the play. Now, you're thinking of Solomon in this play. Now, although Solomon is yes, he is a comic character, but he's had his own tragedy. His daughter committed suicide when she was a young girl and is still haunted by that. But again, it's a kind of humor through language. I mean, I think clearly this character must be based on someone that Arthur Miller knew, because he obviously had such fun writing the extraordinary kind of language that some of this Russian Jewish American guy has, a combination of idiosyncrasy in the way he speaks and grammatical error and everything. There's a whole load of stuff that kind of just you could tell that Arthur must have loved writing this. Even just something as simple as he says at one stage, "Let me give you piece advice." And when we were rehearsing the play, because I'm very meticulous on making sure the actors have were perfect, and in rehearsal said, "Let me give you a piece of advice," which is what you would normally say, and I'd have to point out, no, it's not a piece of advice, it's a piece of advice, and that's the kind of oddity or idiosyncrasy of these speech patterns that Solomon has that all builds up to this comic creation, if you see what I mean. So really, in a sense, it's no different than directing any other character, really. You just kind of try to play what the character means or wants or thinks in any given moment and hope that what is funny will reveal itself rather than trying to make it funny. I have to say, though, with Kenneth's performance, I think it's a staggeringly good performance. I've never worked with Kenneth Allen Taylor before, and a lot of people might think of us as unlikely bedfellows in a way, because Kenneth has a kind of history that is very different to mine. He too is a director, as you know, is an artistic director of two theatres, but every year he plays the pantomime Dame, doesn't he, in the pantomime, you know, and he has a different kind of history in what he's done, but we got on fantastically well in this rehearsal period. And even though, as directors, we would approach things very differently, I think he's been wonderfully generous and open to my style of directing that will be very different to his. And we've really enjoyed working together. And I think I can't even quite imagine the part being played better, to be honest, than his playing it.
Yeah, you've directed this in the round again, in this, it's very versatile space, of course, the Octagon, and you've directed quite a few plays, but particularly things like Miller and Ibsen when you did Ghosts as well. What do you think that brings to a play like this?
Well, I'm very, very fond of it as a form anyway, because I think it's such a sort of, if you like, primal idea. You know, they're just a group of people sitting around in a circle and other human beings playing out a story for them. It seems just a sort of simple, basic act of theatre. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of theatre at its simplest, isn't it, in terms of actors telling a story for people who are sitting around watching that story unfold. So I always like it as a form anyway. But to answer your question a little bit more precisely, I think it all takes place in this attic room, as you know, and in plays like that, I just think it's great for the audience to have that sense that they are flies on the wall, that the event is unfolding. It could be unfolding whether or not they were there, really. They happen to be privileged to be watching what's going on in this very realistic situation. I think the plays lend themselves to that anyway, but also the other thing is about it is because it's such an emotional play, all of the audience are very close, and a lot of them within touching distance of characters who are going through these extreme emotions, I think that makes it even more compelling for an audience. Also, there's another factor, actually, which I've only just thought of now, because I'm really thought of this till you asked me, but I think it also draws out a higher quality of acting in actors because they have to engage with each other in a more direct and dynamic way than they do in a let's say, a pre-cinematic or end stage thing, where there's a kind of artifice in a pre-cinematic production, isn't there? Where, you know, you're actually not that actors kind of face up front the whole time, you know what I mean? But actually, the very physical nature of it is unreal, isn't it? Whereas, if you're in the round, even though you do have, there's still stagecraft involved, but hopefully it's a stagecraft that the audience aren't conscious of at all. They don't notice, you know, hopefully. They don't notice that you just make sure that it's staged so that the audience don't get someone's back too often and all that sort of stuff. But as long as you can trick the audience into thinking that there is no artifice, this is just people in a room who are going through this stuff in front of you, then that helps their sense of belief, I think. But as far as the actors are concerned, I think it helps you draw out higher quality performances, really. Or conversely, if the actors aren't good at it or aren't good enough, it exposes their weaknesses, which is the danger. So you do need, you know, a shit hot cast, really, in plays like this for them to survive in that situation. There's no hiding place, is there? Yeah. They're on there, and if you take someone like Tom Mannion, he's on there for 2.25 hours from beginning to end, and there's nowhere to run, is there? And so it does pull that out of them, I think.
And that greater focus, and everybody's focused on the centre, and that greater intimacy as well. A lot of actors that have performed at the Royal Exchange have said that it's very close to acting in a film studio, because you're that close to everything.
Yeah, exactly. But I just think it's a lovely theatre space, the Octagon. I just think, I was talking to Suzanne Sylvester, plays Esther in it, last night, about what it's like working here. And I went to see on Saturday night a production at the Almeida Theatre of a David Eldridge play, The Knot of the Heart, a new play about drug addiction and a family that's dealing with a young woman who has heroin addiction, and wonderful production of this play. And I'm not saying this in any derogatory way about the audience, just as an observation. I would say the class makeup of that audience in the Almeida Theatre when I saw it on Saturday night was pretty narrow. I would think if you kind of had a kind of survey which said, how much do you earn, what profession, you know, do your children go to public school, etc., 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 I would say the boxes that people tick would reveal quite a narrow demographic. Now, the reason I so enjoy and value working at the Octagon is, of every theatre I've ever worked in my entire life, this has the broadest range of people in the audience coming to it. A lot of people for whom this is the only theatre they go to, for example, they don't even go to the Manchester Royal Exchange. Well, this is their theatre. And a lot of people who don't, often when you do a play like The Price, you know that a very high proportion of the audience will definitely never have seen it before. Some will never have heard of Arthur Miller. And then at the other end of the scale, you have people who are, thanks to Dominic's wonderful review and the Guardian review and reviews like that, people are coming from York, traveling from York, people last night, because they'd read the reviews and traveled over to York to see it, coming from Manchester. And so we're getting a range in our audience that is very, very satisfying for actors and certainly for a director, because you feel you're playing to everybody, which I know is what Arthur Miller would most want. Because in an early conversation I had with him, I was talking about his early plays and saying, what were you trying to do when you're writing these plays? And he said two things that really stick in my mind. One was, he said, I was trying to write a play that a lawyer, a doctor, a docker would all enjoy. And I know if he was here now watching this production, he would just love the fact that the audience was full of normal people, as it were, you know? And another thing he said to me once, which I kind of often quote to actors because I think it's such a helpful thing to say. He said, I was trying to that to write a play that if you told the story to a guy on the train, he'd get it. And it's that at the heart of all his plays, I think. That at the heart of it, there is this kind of very straightforward, simple narrative. You know, so if you were talking, if someone on the train, you know, to expand a little bit on what Arthur was saying there, if someone on the train said to me, oh, what's that play you're reading? So it's a play. You said, well, what's it about then? And if you actually try to summarize it in a couple of two or three sentences, anybody would relate to that idea, wouldn't they? Two brothers, one of them thought he was doing his duty by his father, the other one kind of left home and got on with his career, and they didn't see each other for 15 years. The audience would want to know what happened, to put it crudely, wouldn't they? So what happened when they saw each other then after 16 years? And when you're sitting there in the theatre watching this play, I sort of feel the audience are gripped by what the outcome's going to be. How's this going to work out? How painful is it going to get? You know, how much are they going to reveal about themselves? Will they make it up? Won't they make it up? Et cetera, et cetera, you know?
And of course, he uses straightforward everyday language as well to produce really profound themes, doesn't he?
Exactly. So, yeah.
So, you've been at the Octagon, this is your second year now, you're coming to the end of, isn't it?
Yes.
I hope you don't mind me saying, you've just, in December, wasn't it, you passed a certain age landmark as well?
40th birthday, yeah. My 40th birthday, yeah.
And you don't seem to be somebody who is winding down for retirement.
No, I wouldn't know what to do. You're not going to retire, are you?
I hope not, no.
I don't think of work as being... I mean, it's a great privilege. From the very first day I stepped into York Theatre Royal as an ASM, having kind of just done an MA in Shakespeare, having done a degree, and I thought, God, this is nice, isn't it? To actually get paid for something you like doing. And... I've been a very, very fortunate man, really, because I've managed to survive, and sometimes it's quite hard to survive with four children, and I've managed to have four wonderful children, all over 18 now, you know, three boys in their 20s, and work in a very kind of creative and interesting and inspiring way, working with some wonderful people and knocking around the minds of people like Arthur Miller, William Shakespeare, Tennessee Williams, or whatever, is very invigorating in itself. And luckily, someone's decided to pay me to do it as well. And so I think I'll only stop doing it when people think it's no good and stop paying me. And then I guess I'll have to think of something else to do.
Well, I think people will be paying you to do it for quite a long time yet.
Let's hope so. But if I have a mortgage problem, I'll get you to write my bank manager to remind them of that, okay?
All right. Well, thanks very much for that. Thank you for talking to me.
Well, thank you too. I better get back to rehearse this other play now, The Demolition Man, which, look, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks ever so much.